Welcome to Torat Imecha, Nach Yomi with the OU Women's Initiative. My name is Leah Feinberg, and today we will be learning Sefer Shmuel Aleph, Perek Yud Dalet, Chapter 14. At the end of the last Perek, Shaul remained with his diminished army of only 600 men, about to face off against the massive forces of the Plishtim. Other than Shaul and Yonatan themselves, the Jewish army was without any arms or ammunition. Shmuel had turned his back on Shaul after Shaul failed to wait for him before offering the sacrifice as he had instructed, since that had been a test to see whether, as king, he would strictly follow the word of Hashem. Having failed, Shmuel prophesied that Shaul would not establish a lasting dynasty. In today's perek, we will learn about the bravery and heroism of Shaul and his son Yonatan on the battlefield. We will continue to explore Shaul's development as the first king of Israel and begin to study Yonatan's character and the father-son relationship of Shaul and Yonatan. Pasuk Aleph, verse 1. Vayhi hayom, vayomer Yonatan ben Shaul el hana'ar nosei kelav, l'chavna abra el matzav plishtim asher me'ever halaz, ula aviv, lo higid. On that day, when the Plishtim had set forth toward Michmas, Yonatan, the son of Shaul, said to his arms bearer, "Let's go forth to meet the Plishtim." But he did not tell his father. Dat Sofrim suggests that in the beginning of the Pasuk, Yonatan is identified as Ben Shaul, the son of Shaul, in order to stress that, in general, he had a good relationship with his father. He conducted himself as the son of Shaul. The fact that the Pasuk ends with him embarking on a dangerous mission of his own volition without his father's knowledge should not be taken as a comment on their overall relationship. Mishpitzot Zahav supports this. He cites Kli Yakar, who adds that Shaul and Yonatan were on opposite sides of the mountain, and Yonatan sensed that the moment was right for divine salvation, and there was just simply no time to contact Shaul. He had to act in the moment. In Psukim Bet Adhei 2 through 5, the Navi gives us some further background information, which sets the stage for the battle about to happen. Shaul was stationed at the outskirts of Giv'ah, under the pomegranate tree at Migron, with his 600 men. With the nation there was Achiah, the son of Achituv, who was the older brother of Ikavod, the baby who had been born to the wife of Pinchas as she died, Eli's grandson. And Achiah wore the ephod, the priestly garment to which was attached the choshen, the breastplate containing the Urim v'Tumim, which allowed for Hashem to be consulted by the Kohen. This is foreshadowing. It's a detail that will become relevant as the story progresses. The nation was unaware that Yonatan had gone forth from among them. The Navi gives us some topographical information. Between the passes that Yonatan wanted to cross to meet the Plishti garrison were two rocky precipices facing one another, projecting over the valley. One was called Botzetz and the other Sene. And the fact that these outcroppings had names suggests that they were unusually tall and imposing and posed a significant barrier to Yonatan's plan. Pasuk Vav, verse 6, Vayomer Yonatan el Hanar, Nosei Kelav, Lechavina Abra el Matzav Ha'arelim Ha'ele, Ulay Ya'ase Hashem Lanu, Ki En La'ashem Ma'atzor Lehoshia, Birav Ovima'at. Yonatan said to his arms bearer, "Let us cross to the garrison of the Plishtim," whom he refers to derogatively as the uncircumcised ones. "Perhaps Hashem will perform a miracle for us, for nothing prevents Hashem from affecting salvation, whether many or few." And we may note here that this is the first time Yonatan's name is spelled with a he, Yehonatan, implying that he is infused with a spirit, with the spirit of Hashem at this point. He is motivated by a spiritual sensitivity that's propelling him forward. Vayomer lo nosei kelav, ase kol asher bilvavecha, nitelach, hineni imcha kilvavecha. And his arms bearer responded with full trust in him, "Do as you wish, as your heart tells you. Choose your direction. I am here to do that which is in your heart." Yonatan and his arms bearer express complete faith in Hashem. It's clear that they're facing a battle that cannot be won according to the laws of nature. The only possible path to victory is if Hashem were to perform a miracle, in which case the number of men involved on either side would be irrelevant. The arms bearer reflects that if Yonatan feels moved to take such a risk, he must be divinely inspired, and he places complete trust in Yonatan as Hashem's emissary. Yonatan now sets up a sign. Pasuk Chet, verse 8, Vayomir Yehonatan, again with the hey, Hine anachnu ovrim el ha'anashim v'niglinu aleihem. We're going to ascend up to towards the plishtim, and as we cross, we will reveal ourselves to them. Im ko yomru eleinu, domu, ad higienu aleichem, ve'amadnu tachtenu v'lo na'ale aleihem. If they say to us, halt, stand still until we reach you, we will stay where we are and not go up to them. Ve'im ko yomru, alu aleinu, ve'alinu, ki nitanam Hashem bi'adeinu, v'zelanu ha'ot. If they say, come up to us, we will go up, for we will know that Hashem has delivered them into our hands. That will be the sign. According to Rashi, Yonatan was thinking strategically. If the plishtim tell us to stay put, that means they feel confident and will pursue us relentlessly. So we may as well stand there and give up. If they tell us to come up to them, then even though they have the advantage of both height and military strength, then we will know that they are afraid to leave their station because they are paralyzed by fear of God. And that will be the sign that we will surely be victorious. In this manner, Rashi explains that the sign that Yonatan devised was not divination, which would be forbidden, but rather simple logical deduction. Radak explains similarly that the language of the plishtim would reveal the outcome. If they say, domu, halt, then we will be stopped in our tracks. If they say, alu aleinu, come up upon us, then we will know that Hashem has given us dominance over them. He adds, this is clearly not divination, similar to Rashi, for if it were, Hashem would not have helped them as he is about to do. So the two men allowed themselves to be seen by the plishtim, and the plishtim said, look, the Hebrews are coming out of the crevices where they were hiding. And they called down to Yonatan and his arms bearer, come up to us, we have something to tell you. And Yonatan said to his arms bearer, come up after me, for Hashem has given them into the hands of Israel. Note that Yonatan takes no glory for himself. Not Hashem has given them into our hands, but into the hands of Israel. He sees himself only as someone fulfilling a mission on behalf of the entire nation. Pasuk Yud Gimel, verse 13, Vaya'al Yonatan al yadav ve'al raglav, v'nosei kelav acharav, v'yiplu lifnei Yonatan v'nosei kelav mimotet acharav. Yonatan climbed up the mountain on his hands and feet, again attesting to the significance of this precipice upon up which he was climbing, with his arms bearer behind him. And when he reached the top, the plishtim fell before him while his arms bearer killed those behind him. In their first attack, Yonatan and his arms bearer slew about 20 men, causing great terror on the battlefield. There was such terror in the camp that even the ground trembled in holy terror. Pasuk Tet Zayin, verse 16. Vayiru hatzofim l'Shaul b'giv'at Binyamin, v'hinei hehamon namog, v'yelech v'halom. The lookouts of Shaul, who were in Gev'at Binyamin, saw multitudes of plishtim scattering and running back and forth. Vayomer Shaul la'am asherito, pikduna, ureu mi halach me'imanu. Vayifkedu, vihine ein Yonatan v'nosei kelav. Shaul, realizing that there must have been some provocation that caused the uproar in the plishti camp, ordered that a count be taken to see who was missing from the Israelite camp. And behold, Yonatan and his arms bearer were missing. Shaul instructed Achiah to bring forth the Aron that accompanied the nation out to war, so that he could consult with Hashem. But as he was speaking, the commotion among the multitudes of Plishtim grew even greater, and Shaul told Achiah to stay his hand. The commentators are divided as to what prompted Shaul to desist from consulting with Hashem. According to Radak and Malbim, the increased commotion in the camp of the Plishtim made it clear that they were confused and would be easily defeated, so there was no longer any need for divine assurance. While, according to Mahari Kara, Shaul felt so threatened by the advancing Plishtim that he felt there was no time to consult with Hashem, and they had better simply rush to the battlefront. The lack of clarity in the text reflects this confusion on the battlefield. Pasuk Chaf, verse 20, Vayizaek Shaul b'chol ha'am asherito, Vayavou ad ha'milchama, V'hine ha'ita cherev ish b're'ehu, Mihuma gdola me'od. Shaul and all his men rallied and rushed into the battle, and behold, each Plishti had turned his sword against one another in complete pandemonium. V'ha'ivrim hayu la'plishtim ke'etmol shilshom asher alu imam b'machane saviv, v'gam heim aliyot im Yisrael asher im Shaul v'Yonatan. The Hebrews who were with the Plishtim in the preceding days and who had ascended with them to the battlefield now turned around and fought alongside Shaul and Yonatan. Who are these Hebrews who had sided with the Plishtim? Rashi explains that these were Jews who had sided with the Plishtim willingly out of fear, while Radak and Malbi maintained that these were Jews who lived in territories that had been captured by the Plishtim and had been forcibly conscripted into the Plishti army. In either case, they now returned wholeheartedly to fight alongside their Jewish brothers. And all those who had been hiding on Har Ephraim heard that the Plishtim were retreating, and they too joined the war, from which they had fled in fear before it even began. Pasuk Chaf Gimel, verse 23, Vayosha Hashem Bayom Hahu et Yisrael, Vahamilchama Avra et Beit Aven. And Hashem saved Yisrael on that day, and the battle passed the boundary of Beit Aven. Note that the phrase Vayosha Hashem Bayom Hahu echoes the salvation of Kriyat Yamsuf, the splitting of the sea, implying that now as then, the victory was entirely due to Hashem's intervention. While the initial stage of the battle is over, the war is not yet won. Malbim describes that when Shaul arrived at Beit Aven, he saw that his soldiers had stopped their pursuit of the enemy. He explains that their morale was low. They had only fought to begin with because they felt compelled to. There was no real motivation to fight for the sake of their homeland. No feeling of Ein li eretz acheret, such as that motivating our brave soldiers on the battlefield today. We have no other country. Therefore, Shaul swore that none of his men would eat bread until the enemy was completely defeated, and the people continued to fight to rout the enemy, becoming increasingly tired and weak. They reached a place where honey was dripping from hives in the trees and had formed pools of honey on the ground. No one touched the honey because they were afraid of Shaul's oath. However, Yonatan, who had not been present when his father uttered the oath but had now rejoined the army, dipped his staff into the honey and tasted it, and his eyes lit up. Many of the commentators note that he was so exhausted from the battle that his vision had become blurred, and the honey restored his clear sight. One man stepped forward and rebuked Yonatan, saying, "Your father made an oath, cursing anyone who would eat today before the total defeat of the enemy, and the people are weary yet have refrained from eating in consequence of your father's oath." Pasuk Chavtet, verse 29, Vayomer Yonatan, Achar avi et haaretz, Reuna, ki oru enai, ki ta'amti me'at bash hazeh. Yonatan said, "My father has caused distress to the land. Just see how my eyes lit up when I tasted the honey. Af ki lu achol achal hayom ha'am mishlal oivav asher matza ki ata lo ravta makabla plishtim. If only the people had eaten from the spoils, our victory would have been so much greater." Mishpatzot Zahav cites Rav Moshe David Vali, who tries to help us understand Shaul's behavior. He explains that Shaul's intentions were good. He saw that this was an Eit Ratzon, a time of divine goodwill towards Israel, and wanted to capitalize on the moment and bring the people closer to Hashem by fasting. Nevertheless, this was a mistake, because a fast is only called at an Eit Tzara, a time of trouble, in order to effect salvation. Moreover, Shaul erred by taking an oath because this created a stumbling block for the people by putting them into an unnecessarily challenging situation. In the heat of the moment, Yonatan expressed his frustration with his father's misreading of the situation. The consequences of Shaul's oath follow quickly on the heels of Yonatan's outburst. The people continued their pursuit of the Plishtim, still bound by Shaul's oath not to eat until the evening, and pressed the Plishtim from Michmas to Ayalon, and the nation was thoroughly exhausted. When evening fell, and the oath was lifted, they fell upon the spoils like birds of prey, and in their haste to eat, after fasting and fighting, slaughtered sheep and cattle and ate before all the blood was drained, violating a biblical commandment. Shaul was told that the people were sinning and immediately took charge of the situation. Demonstrating his leadership abilities, he had a big boulder rolled to where he stood and declared that animals may only be slaughtered upon that rock under his direct supervision, bringing order from the chaos that had erupted. Shaul then wanted to descend upon the Plishtim during the night and finish them off. The nation expressed their willingness to follow him with one voice, but the Kohen admonished Shaul, saying that they should first consult Hashem. So Shaul asked whether he should go to battle against the Plishtim and whether he would be victorious, but there was no answer. Thus Shaul realized that some wrongdoing had been committed and was blocking his ability to communicate with Hashem, and he decreed that everyone's deeds must be examined, and even if the sin was found to be with his own son Yonatan, he would be put to death. According to the Midrash, he mentioned Yonatan because he had noticed that the light of the stone representing his tribe, Binyamin, on the priestly breastplate had dimmed and suspected Yonatan of some wrongdoing. But according to most commentators, Yonatan's sin had been pardonable. He hadn't heard his father's oath, although perhaps he should have noticed that no one else was eating and asked why. And his sight was suffering from his weakness, which would have obviated the command to fast. So why didn't Hashem respond when Shaul consulted the Urim V'Tumim if Yonatan's sin was pardonable? Either to show that Yonatan's wrongdoing was not overlooked because of favoritism, or that Hashem was upset with Shaul not because of Yonatan, but because of his own failure to have waited for Shmuel. Lots were drawn and fell upon Yonatan, and Yonatan admitted having eaten from the honey. Without attempting to make excuses, he said, "Hineni amut, I will die, if that is the decree." Shaul decreed that Yonatan would be put to death, but the people protested, saying, "Should Yonatan, who was the catalyst for today's great victory, be put to death?" And the nation saved Yonatan from death that day. There's a clear implication that if Shaul had refused to execute those evildoers who had mocked him on the day of the nation's salvation, certainly he should pardon his own son, who was a hero of Israel. In verses 46 to 52, we are given an epilogue to this chapter that affords us an overview of Shaul's leadership. Following this battle and the lack of an answer from Hashem about whether or not to proceed, Shaul returned home and the Plishtim withdrew. Pasuk Mem Zayin 47, V'Shaul lakad hamlucha al Yisrael. Shaul actively took control over the kingship of Israel. This phrase contrasts with Shaul's initial accession to the kingship. In chapter 9, verse 21, where we find the same root, Lamid Chaf Dalid, in the passive form, Vayi lakad Shaul ben Kish, Vayivakshuhu velo nimtza. Shaul's name was designated by the lottery, but he was nowhere to be found. Shaul has now risen to command the position he once hid from. He fought bravely against all the enemies surrounding Israel. Moab, Ammon, Tsova, the Plishtim, anyone who threatened Israel. He fought valiantly and smote Amalek and all the enemies of Israel. The Pasuk tells us that Shaul's family prospered along with the kingship. His sons were Yonatan, Yishvi, and Malkishua, and his daughters were Merab and Michal. His wife was Ahinoam, daughter of Achimaat, and the general of his army was his cousin, Avner ben Ner. The war with the Plishtim persisted throughout the days of Shaul, and whenever Shaul encountered a valiant warrior, he would recruit him to his army. In this lengthy perek, we saw Shaul go from an initially hesitant military leader who was sitting under the pomegranate tree while Yonatan risked his life, to a valiant warrior commanding the loyalty and respect of a strong army and consolidating the power of the kingdom. On a personal level, we are left with a sense that the relationship between Shaul and Yonatan has become somewhat uneasy, perhaps somewhat competitive, although they still stand together to protect the nation from its enemies. Thank you for learning together Le'ilui Nishmot Imhotenu Hayikarot, Esther Oppenheimer Aleha Shalom, and Sarah Schenker Aleha Shalom, each deeply devoted and proud to transmit their family's Torah legacy to the next generations.